Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hockey fans. Welcome once again to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I am Mark Warner along with Chris Leith on Long Island. We bring you a twice weekly hockey talk show centered around the Vegas Golden Knights. This week, our special guest is going to be Mike Aguayo. He reports for Hockey Buzz and a couple other sites we'll get into with him. We're going to be talking about the Buffalo Sabres fast start. Let me bring in Chris. He's out on Long Island. Good day to you, sir.
Good day to you, yeah, and a big thanks to Russ Cohen for that assistance. It's a Mike Aguayo, by the way.
Aguayo, okay, but I wanted to get that right, sir. Thank you.
No worries. So looking forward to that. But first, we have a little bit of breaking news, although we're trying to figure out what it means. So why don't you break that down?
Well, yeah, full credit. Jesse Granger from The Athletic reporting. Marc-Andre Fleury not at practice today. I'll go back a little bit. He played all of Thursday's game against Montreal, and we'll get into that as well. But yesterday he was not at practice and was labeled a maintenance day. Garrett Sparks was recalled on an emergency basis, and I thought that was just Subban got hurt again. He's whatever you think of his goaltending skills and backup ability or whatever you want to say, he has proven to be a little bit snake bit on the injury front. He played one period so far this season and left with an injury and had just come back to practice on Wednesday along with Schmitty and Tuck, and England only playing 8 seconds of the third period in the previous game. England was full skate as well Wednesday. So it's the first time and since the season started that the Golden Knights have had their full complement of players on the ice for a practice. And then, so Fleury plays Thursday, not at practice Friday, labeled a maintenance day. Garrett Sparks recalled and then not on the ice this morning at practice is Marc-Andre Fleury. And Subban is on the ice for practice. And this is reporting from Jesse Granger of The Athletic. I'll give him credit again. So, yeah, we don't know what that means yet. I've been making some phone calls trying to track down. I mean, it could be an illness. It could be any number of things. I don't really want to speculate, but that's what's being reported right now in the Vegas market. Marc-Andre Fleury not on the ice at practice, and I guess we'll see. Game time decision that has not been announced. Still scrolling through the Marc-Andre Fleury hashtag on Twitter, trying to get a little more information out of this for the show, but I don't, I'll give Sinbin Vegas a shout out. Subban is at practice this morning to use emergency recall. A roster must have fewer than two goalies. Thus, Marc-Andre Fleury is officially the reason VGK had to call Garrett Sparks. More reporting after practice. So, I mean, that's where we're at right now. It could be anything. We're not going to speculate. Hopefully everything's well with him. Maybe, like you said, Chris, he might just be sick. But that's the latest breaking here in Las Vegas.
Yeah, hopefully it's something short-term. It's a long season, and if at the end of the day he might have half tweaked something and you want to be safer than sorry, and so you've got to, shut someone down for 3 or 4 days kind of thing, and that's why you have a number two goalie, if you will. But, obviously the concern, and there's no point of getting there yet because we don't know. But if this is more of a longer term situation, this is not, when you look at the roster of the Knights, this is not a super strength. Subban, his first year with the Knights, he was really good when he played, but since then he's, been up and down and injured. And, and Sparks is kind of like that emergency, number three goalie in the AHL who can – spot you a game here or there kind of thing. So I don't want to go too crazy about it because until we know what's what, and at the end of the day, you know, they have the home game tonight against Winnipeg, and then next week they go east. They think I forget the order, but I believe they have Columbus, Toronto, and I want to say Washington, but I could be wrong. They go out east. So we'll have to see how that plays out. And this is also off of a tough loss. So granted, they did get 1 point, but it's one of those points when you look back at the when you come playoff time, and if you just miss out getting home ice, or heaven forbids, in a battle to make the playoffs, those kind of games last night, you kick yourself. Up 4-2 with a little under 7 minutes to go at home. You had to feel good that wind was coming their way, and they wound up losing in overtime. So that was a tough one.
Yeah, that's the saddest words in hockey. At least we got a point, right? In the show notes, the good, VGK gets Schmidt, Tuck, and Subban back on the same day. The bad, they lose to Montreal the next day. The ugly, they blow a 4-2 lead with 6 minutes left in the third and lose 27 seconds into overtime. We had the good news. We talked a little bit about it Wednesday in our new midweek report show for the hockeypodcastnetwork.net. So Schmidty and Tuck back. Subban was back. England, we found out just a minor thing. He was in full practice. And, you know, Tuck I was watching the game, excuse me, and Schmidt worked the puck up the wing to Tuck, and Tuck came down the left side and sniped at 5-hole. And I tweeted out, all is right in the VGK universe. Beautiful goal by Tuck. If you get Schmidty and Tuck back, and Schmidty assists on Tuck's first goal this season, that's a good thing. So it was good for a day, and then this morning we get the Marc-Andre Fleury news, and hopefully it's a short term deal. So I think, you know, Tuck looked good. Schmidt looked a little bit hesitant at times, not his usual self on breakouts. Maybe it's just, you know, getting the legs going again. It wasn't the injury, so maybe you're a little hesitant on it, testing it. You know, you test it in practice, but it's not game speed. So we'll look at that a little bit more tonight against Winnipeg. See how Schmidty looks tonight. Tuck looked great. We know it was an upper body injury. We know it was something to do with his right arm / lower extremity hand, and he didn't show any effects of that, and he looked really good in the game against Montreal. But, you know, they got up 4-2, and, you know, the general consensus is they just kind of said, okay, we'll kick it into autopilot here and close this thing out. And Montreal never stopped playing. They get the lucky bounce. I forget who exactly it was right there that cleared the puck into, I want to say, Tatar's midsection, and it bounced off him and went in behind Marc-Andre Fleury and sent the game to overtime. And they never touched the puck in overtime. So, you know, it's a process. It's a long season. Essentially, it's a lot different roster than started the season last year. You got two players joining the team really for the first time this season. So it takes a while. The learning process is going to be is how to get a consistent 60 minutes effort out of this club, because last week's episode, the bipolar start, now we've seen the bipolar game where they played really, really good at times against Montreal, and they played really, really bad at times against Montreal. And it cost them a point in the standings, and it dropped them from second in the Pacific down into a wild card position. And I know it's early, but you don't want to start setting that precedent. They need to build that identity of being the hardworking team that, Vegas fell in love with. That has to be the identity of this Vegas Golden Knights team, Chris.
Yeah, I agree. Like this again. It just seems very up and down, and in this case, up and down in the same game, which sometimes happens for teams. But I'd like to see a little bit more consistency. They have the roster to do it. Real quick, how did Nick Suzuki look?
Suzuki looked fine. He wasn't overly noticeable, good or bad.
Okay.
He had a couple nice plays where he was able to show his speed and a little bit of stick handling, but not overly noticeable either way.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a big game tonight because I'd like to get the W before heading out east once again on a three-game road trip. So you don't want to, you know, and you're also coming off a tough loss, overtime there, be it as it may. But, Columbus, Toronto, Washington, no back-to-backs in – oh, excuse me, it's a four-game trip. Then they go to Detroit. So the last end of that, it's a back-to-back, Washington and Detroit next Saturday and Sunday. So I thought it was a three-game trip. It's a four-game trip. So I'd like to get the wins come hell or high water tonight. Whoever's in goal, and Winnipeg's been up and down themselves for different reasons, and then head on that four game trip, and hopefully keep their heads above water.
Well, yeah, that was when we were talking Wednesday. That was that Detroit game was where I thought Subban would get his first action back. I mean, it looks like it will be tonight. So I mean, what do you think Gallant would do if he has Subban and Sparks for the week? Is he going to go every other game? You think that they'll ride Subban and put their eggs in that basket, if you will? What do you think the week ahead looks like?
I would think that would be he would get the first crack, and as long as he plays okay, when you head into the back to backs that next weekend, depending upon. Well, Fleury's at or whatnot. If that's the case, that might be where Sparks might get a game, maybe against Detroit. I don't think you're going to play Sparks against Washington. So, and Subban needs to work. So, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday kind of thing.
Yep. And I know a lot of people, I mean, it's like the backup quarterback in football, right? Everybody usually wants to see the backup goalie, and there's there's a big portion of Golden Knights Nation that is clamoring for Sparks because he had the shutout in the preseason, and then we only saw him in mop-up duty in a horrible game. So a lot of people are already on Twitter wanting to see Garrett Sparks. It'll be interesting to see if Subban has a great game tonight, whether they ride him out through the week or, you know, if he struggles a little bit against Winnipeg. And, you know, it's his first game back from injury, too. So, and we don't know, obviously, we were talking before the show about the nature of NHL injury reporting. We don't really know what the problem with Subban was. So we don't know what to look for in a re-aggravation possibly or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to see if he can get through the full 60 minutes healthy after, you know, coming off an injury, and B, if he struggles a little bit, do we see Garrett Sparks on the road before the Detroit game?
Yeah. Well, like I said, Subban definitely needs to work, and we talked ad nauseum on this show, both this year and last year and probably the year before, about, you know, let's not overwork Fleury, even if we don't have a back-to-back situation, because he is getting a little bit older and he can still do the workload is, he can fill up the pitcher, if you will, but let's not overflow it. And I know, like I said, the analytics community, for what it's worth, believes that during the regular season that line of demarcation is kind of that 55 game. Again, take that as what it's worth. But when you get a goaltender at 34, 35, in that range, you know, all things being equal, I don't think you want to play them 65 to 70 games. And not for nothing, you know, he's slated to be their guy the next couple of years, where you're paying him $7 million a year, or he's counting $7 million against the cap those 2 years. So you're gonna be relying on him. So it's not just keeping him strong and fresh for the whole of this season, but the rest of his contract.
Yeah, 100%. And now, and I mean, along those lines, Marc-Andre Fleury's played 13 and, you know, 0.75 periods out of 14 games now. I guess we'll see where this goes. Our featured guest of the episode is on the line, Chris.
Yeah, so first time with a big assist from Russ Cohen. I asked Russ Cohen, I said, Russ, we need the man. Who's the man to talk Sabres? And he said, that's easy. That's Mike Cajello, and he joins us. He's a reporter for the Hockey Buzz, writer for the Featured and Official Report. You can find him on Twitter at Mike in Buffalo. And him and his cohorts with Russ and Eklund over at the Hockey Buzz have a daily webcast show. Mike, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Good morning, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm well.
So we were talking last week, Mike. We have to talk Sabres because they were one of the early stories, and I'm not taking responsibility for jinxing them this week. although the Arizona game, they get a point last night, was probably their worst game of the year. But be that as it may, one game, what has been the keys to the Sabres' hot start to the season so far, 9-3-2 going into tonight's action?
Well, I have to say that this is unexpected, at least from my point of view. I thought the Sabres were, at best, a bubble team. They had a very easy October schedule, and under a new coach in Ralph Kruger, I think they were enthused and energetic and hopeful to impress the new coach. And I think there have been some pretty good performances so far, but we saw last night against Washington that maybe they're coming back down to earth. They've lost three of the last four games. I was at the game on Monday against Arizona, and after a really good first period, the Coyotes dominated puck possession except for like a three-minute stretch in the second period where they couldn't get the puck out of the zone and lost in the shootout. I mean, everything is going right for the Sabres right now, and they're tied with Boston atop the Atlantic Division, but the schedule gets tougher for them in November, and I expect a little bit of a correction this month.
So, Mike, the big question for me with looking at the Sabres, obviously they have Eichel, they have Reinhardt, they have Skinner, they have some real good skill up front. You know, last year, 24th in the league in terms of goals allowed. And this year, going into, again, last night's action, granted it's a small sample size, but sixth. How would you rate their blue line and their goaltending in terms of holding up? And it seems like they kind of, like some teams around the league, have that 1 and 1A, even though Carter Hunt's the 1 situation. How do you think that's going to play out for the long haul between their goaltending and their blue line?
Well, first, their blue line. I mean, Rasmus Dahlin is an extremely talented young defenseman. I mean, he's having a little growing pains in terms of his defensive play, but offensively, I think he's, you know, one of the best young defensemen in the NHL and was a Calder finalist last year. Rasmus Ristolainen has been mentioned in trade rumors for the last 2 or 3 years, but seems to be playing better under Kruger. I don't think their defense, you know, the blue line is actually the problem because, you know, they have Brandon Montour, who's been out since training camp with a hand injury. He's coming back tonight. Henry Okahariu, who they got from Chicago for Alex Nylander, veteran guys like Jake McCabe and Marco Scandella, and they added Colin Miller, obviously, from the Knights. So I think their defense is pretty good. Where I've been questioning is their goaltending. Carter Hutton, in my mind, is a glorified backup. He's not a bad goaltender, but he's not a starter in this league. And Linus Ullmark is 23 years old and at this point has not shown the ability to take on a number one job. They have a really good young prospect in the organization named Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and they drafted him in the second round a couple of years ago. He won the World Junior for Finland last year and I think was OHL Goalie of the Year, but he's a couple years away. So I think right now they're trying to, you know, have a better season with sort of a patchwork in goal And if they really want to contend for a playoff spot, I think they may have to address the goaltending going further into the season.
So, Mike, a big strength for them so far, the Sabres, that is, this year, has been their power play operating near 30%. Is this, again, due to a small sample size, or do you like what you see and you think this could be super strength and at the end of the day could be the difference between this team, you know, just making the playoffs or just missing it?
Well, I think they have weapons, and I think that their power play has improved, but it's been operating at a ridiculous clip. I know that, like, halfway through the month, they were at 60%. I think that was before a game against Dallas, and now they're in the high 20s. You know, they have talent in terms of a point guy on the power play, if it's Dahlin or Montour has been a power play guy in the past. You know, Miller has a pretty good shot, so they have enough depth in terms of blue liners. And Victor Olsson, who is a really talented young guy who they drafted in the seventh round in 2014, scored 30 goals in the AHL last year, had a cup of coffee with the Sabres at the end of the year. He was NHL Rookie of the Month with 6 power play goals. Now, he hasn't scored a goal yet 5-on-5. That's all fine and good. He's got to score 5-on-5, but they're obviously going to accept the power play. But I think that, you know, with the weapons that they have, Skinner, Reinhart, Eichel, they can keep a high pace going with their power play, but it's not going to be as good as it is right now because it's near the top of the league, and I just don't think they can maintain that.
All right, well, real quick, you mentioned Colin Miller. How's he fit in with the group just in general for the Golden Knights fans listening to the show today?
I think he's fit in fairly well. I mean, I have a lot of experience with Miller, watching him when he played with the Bruins and obviously in the first year with the Knights when they got to the Cup Final. I've always been a fan of his game. Defensively, I think he's sometimes a little bit challenged, but in this league, I think most of the defensemen are not exactly Rod Langway shutdown defensemen anymore. But I think he so far has fit in fairly well, and you know, the Sabres have a nice problem to have, especially in the NHL with the defensive depth being a big question mark for a number of teams. Once Marco Scandella comes back from an injury and now Montour is back, they really have 7 quality defensemen and might be in a position to make a deal to trade at one of the defensemen for some help up front or for a draft pick. I don't think it's going to be Miller because I think they like what they see, but a guy like Scandella, who's an expiring contract, might be someone who eventually gets moved. But I think Miller is probably a second-pairing guy for the rest of the year and so far has played pretty well.
Well, what I liked about him when he was with the Kings organization, he won the hardest shot and the fastest skater in the AHL All-Star game, and that's a nice combination to have. He can do point time on the power play. He can lead a breakout out of the defensive zone. So that's the things that I always liked about Colin Miller's game. We know last season the Sabres had the 10-game unbeaten streak, and then the wheels kind of fell off, and they're off to a super hot start this year. What can this team take from the experience of that happening to them last season, and they can put a little bit more consistency into their game heading deeper into the season?
Well, during that 10-game streak, they got fantastic goaltending, mostly out of Hutton. Skinner was scoring, on almost every opportunity. I mean, everything went right. And the problem with the Sabres was last year is that it was Skinner, it was Eichel, and it wasn't much else. I think that Jason Botterill, the general manager, went out this year and did a few things. He added Marcus Johansson, a good veteran free agent who had played with New Jersey and Boston. He traded for Jimmy Vesey from the Rangers. Added Miller, acquired Yokoharu from the Blackhawks. So everybody, pretty much other than somebody like Jason Pominville, they brought back the same team. So there is more depth there. I think the lesson from last year is that, you need to play with more consistency to be able to continue to win, because they were the best record in the NHL at the end of November. And then from January 1st on, they were the worst record in the NHL. So they need some of those veteran guys to stabilize things. again, I'm questioning whether that's going to be the case. I still think they're going to be sort of a 88 to 90 point team, because I don't think that they have enough in goal and enough consistent offense. But so far, they've done better than I have expected.
And along those lines, Eichel, on that hot streak last year, he's opened the season fantastic. Talk a little bit about Eichel's game, and if he has elevated up into that, I hate to use the phrase, it's such a cliche, but elite player in the National Hockey League?
Well, I think he has definitely taken a higher step. I mean, he's their captain. I think he's depended on. He's the highest paid player. Last year there were, during the streak, he didn't have many goals. He had a ton of assists because it was him and Skinner. He ended up scoring at a pretty good clip for the remainder of the year. He's done that to start off the year this year. They depend on him. He needs to produce for this team to have any success. I think he's taken the burden of leadership on. But, again, he's in a situation where, unlike some other teams in his own division, say Tampa Bay with Stamkos and Braden Point, or Boston with Krejci or Bergeron, or the Leafs with Matthews or Tavares, there is no viable number two center behind Eichel, so he gets the top checker every game. They've been using Marcus Johansson as a de facto number two, and I'm not sure that that's going to work out because he's been mostly a winger for the last few years. But if he can fight through that, I think he's probably a 90 to 95 point center, and that's, you can't sneeze at that.
Not at all. Well, let me throw you over to Chris. We're going to close out with a little Maple Leaf Nation talk. Chris?
Hey, so as well as you know the Sabres, Mike, you know Leafs that good and probably better. So this is a 30,000-foot question for you. Look, we know they're super talented with the skill. I know they're not, Leafs Nation is probably freaking out because they haven't gotten off to the start they'd like, and, they basically have a 500 record. But, dollars to donuts, they're going to finish the year with 100 points or whatnot. But, what is the state of the Leafs in terms of being a true Stanley Cup contender? So, if they play a Boston or a Tampa or Washington in the playoffs, at least it's a coin flip series going in. Because right now, I would think, even though they've, to be fair, the two series they've lost the last 2 years in the first round of the Sabres, I think people do forget, did go seven games. The Leafs aren't in a position to win those series. Granted, that it was the outcome, but it did go seven. But where are we with the Leafs in terms of their deficiencies, and how does Kyle Dubas make this work given his roster construction and his salary cap construction?
Well, I mean, obviously there was an expectation from some people that with the amount of change that the Leafs made during the summer that they were going to struggle early on, especially that they played 14 games in October, four back-to-backs, and their schedule was kind of brutal. It lightens up a little bit in November, so I'm expecting them to sort of get back on the to get off of the schneid and actually play well in November, but. That being said, the concerns about the Leafs right now is defensively they were close to inept at times last year because simply they were a run-and-gun team with a ton of offensive talent and wanted to play sort of that wide-open style. And then when they tried to adjust to a more conservative style or not taking as many risks in the playoffs, it didn't work, and their defense was exposed by the Bruins. This year, they had already added Muzzin last year during the season. They add Tyson Berry and Cody Ceci, and currently, after 14 games, they're 28th in the league in goals against. So it's not just the quality of the blue line. It's the ability of their forwards to play a team defensive style. That's the thing. You guys see how the Knights, when they went to the Cup Final, they played a team defensive style. They played with speed, but they also played – everybody was playing defense. And with the Leafs, I think their mindset is get the puck out of the zone as quickly as possible and get it to the forwards and let's get on the attack. And that's all fine and good during the regular season, but it doesn't win in the playoffs. And if they come up against a team like Washington, who they lost to this week, or Boston, who they lost to in the first month, I don't think they're going to win. And if they don't win in the first round, I think Mike Babcock is going to be out of a job.
Wow.
So just to finish up, Mike, if you were the GM, put your GM hat on, how do you fix it? Do you want to stay to what your strengths are, but there has to be some adjustments? It's also difficult to play a certain way in the regular season and just immediately flip the switch. I know things tighten up and all that, but how would you tweak this roster to make those adjustments? And today's salary cap age and where, you know, their cap is with different contracts, is that feasible? Or, you know, they have to figure it out with what they have right now.
Well, Kyle Dubas has painted himself into a bit of a corner this year. I mean, they needed to trade for David Clarkson's contract just to be able to, you know, make things fit by putting him on long-term injury. They cleared, I think it was $11 or $12 million in cap space by putting Clarkson and Nathan Horton and the two injured players that are going to come back and Zach Hyman and Travis Dermott on LTIR at the beginning of the month. So they really don't have any cap space unless they make a deal where it's money in, money out. And I don't know if that's going to be possible unless it's closer to the deadline. But, you know, on this current roster, I don't know who Dubas would move out. You know, the William Nylander is always a popular name because his contract is not horrible and he's a very effective young scoring forward, but you would have to get a defenseman of a similar age and a similar salary to make a deal like that work, and I don't see that happening in season. So right now, I think they're going to dance with the one who was brung. You know, they're going to be with this team. They're going to see if they straighten things out. Maybe they have the ability to make a tweaking move closer to the deadline. I think the one thing they do need to do is get somebody who plays with a little more sandpaper and toughness, because up until the last game against Washington, they've been pushed around and their big players have been hit and nobody has responded. So that might be something that can be remedied. But right now, I think they're pretty much stuck with the team that they have, and they hope that the talent wins out.
Fantastic stuff, Mike. Thanks for joining us. Tell everyone where they can find your stuff and Twitter and all that good stuff.
Twitter handle is Mike in Buffalo, and you can check out my stuff at HockeyBuzz.com. I'm the Leaf columnist for HockeyBuzz. I also write for Featured and do Leaf-related columns for the Official Report.
Great. Well, you look forward to having you back on again. And real quick, what's the ETA on Tavares, because I know there's a big game on the East Coast coming in the middle of November. Is he going to be back for that one?
Well, he was supposed to play today against Philadelphia. He was a late decision not to be in the lineup. They think that he will be back on Tuesday against Los Angeles. So Thursday, if they play Vegas, he should be back for that game.
All right.
I was thinking of a different game the following week, but okay, sounds good.
Might that be against the Islanders, Chris?
What's that? Yes, which moved to the Coliseum. Go figure, Lou Lamoriello.
All right, well, thanks for your time this morning, Mike. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, there is that other Islanders game going tonight, Chris, against the team we were just really going into detail on with the Sabres. What say you about tonight's game?
Well, you know, look, anytime you have a nice, more than a nice winning streak going, you're like, all right, sooner or later, team that slows the game. I don't care who they are. And, you know, Buffalo had probably the worst game of the year the loss last night in Washington 6-1. And from what I understand, it wasn't even that close. So it was 4-0 after the first. So you, even though both teams coming back-to-back, both teams have to travel, you know, but Buffalo, usually after you have a tough game like that, you know, they got their ears perked up, if you will. But the Islanders have kind of taken a one-game-at-a-time mentality. They've actually gotten better as the streak has gone on. They've won 8 in a row going into this game tonight. Early on, the first half of the streak, I would describe it as they found ways to win. And, you know, they're doing their hallmarks. They're playing great go figure. Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz team, great structure. What Mike was just saying before in terms of the Leafs and commitment or not being able to play in terms of team defense, not just from the defensemen but the forwards, that's one of the Islanders' key ingredients to their secret sauce, is everyone plays not just their blue line, which is very strong, Everyone plays team defense, and they have two good goalies. So everyone's, whoever's in net is always fresh, and they have a good deep team. That's another hidden ingredient of them. So they throw four lines at you, even though they've been battling injuries and illnesses the beginning of the season. So, for instance, like Jordan Eberle hasn't played pretty much this whole time during this streak, as an example. But, you know, they throw four lines at you, they throw three defense, and you're getting a fresh goalie. So that's another secret ingredient. But, and keep in mind, this is the second year play under Trotz. I think a lot of people forgot about that, and yours, me included, from the standpoint of, you know, last year people thought they were a huge surprise. You know, what's the odds that happens again? You know, everything kind of went right, yada, yada. But one thing to think about is, you know, last year was the first year that all these, for the most part, the majority of this roster played under Trotz and played under Trotz's system. So going into year two, one would think they're going to know the system even better, having played as much as they did last year under it, and that there will be the learning curve keeps getting a little bit better. And I think that's what has happened to a bit. Granted, there has been some changes, but for the most part, their roster is very similar to last year. And look, if the Islanders can score enough goals in the game, they're going to win. I mean, under Trotz, they're going to win. I mean, I think I've thrown this stat out before. Last year, when the Islanders scored at least three goals in the game, now, granted, most teams have a good record when that happens, but the Islanders' record is obscene. They were 37-2-2 last year in the regular season when they scored at least three goals in the game. And coincidentally, in the playoffs against Pittsburgh, who they swept, they scored at least three goals in every game. And then when they got swept by Carolina, they failed to reach three goals in every game. And during this streak, I think they've scored three goals in every game, maybe but one, or maybe but all. But so they get enough scoring, and they're tough to beat. And if they, you know, especially if they can play the game from even or ahead, like they did last night once again against Tampa, you know, playing up 2-1 going to the third, they can stick to their game. They're tough to beat. They're tough to beat. So,
one thing about the streak and just in general that Islanders Nation has to be encouraged about is last year Barzal kind of got lost at times, but it seems like he's fitting in and he's able to, you know, find his offense within the scheme. And that maybe, I mean, we've talked about last season that was still a process he was going through, with six goals, five assists, 11 points in 12 games. That has to bode well, even, you know, all streaks come to an end, but that's got to bode well for consistency going forward for this Islanders team.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up, and that's another good point in terms of the Trotz system. Is the rules, one of the rules of thumb is, you know, usually the skilled players, it takes a little bit of time to adjust from the standpoint of when to be fitting into the system, not at the same token, defense, you know, playing the defensive responsibilities first. So it takes a little bit of a learning curve, and usually the offense, because you don't want to screw up on the defensive side with your puck going in the net, suffers a little bit. So, like, for instance, last year,
right,
some people might look at Jordan Eberle, who the first half was non-existent, and then the second half was terrific. And, you know, he finished up with, you know, okay numbers, 40 points, 19 goals, but he really was a different player in the second half. And Lou Lamoureux and Barry Trotz looked at it, okay, it took him a half a season to kind of get adjusted to this system, and now he's kind of figured out how to serve both masters, if you will. So they felt, a lot of people, especially here in Long Island, really wanted them to add a top six scorer via free agency or trade, which they tried, but didn't happen. They felt internally those kind of guys, their numbers would go up, a Barzal and Eberle, people like that. And so far, so good. And what's more impressive about Barzal is the first, I think, four games where actually the Islanders started out they lost three of their first four, I think he might have had like 1 point. So most of those points have come lately. And, and he's gotten better each and every game, and not just with the puck, but also without the puck. The amount of he's battling, he's shooting more. He's really – everything's kind of coming together for him. So, but like I said, tonight's not going to be an easy task.
All right, let's head around the league a little bit. Off to quick starts. We've got speaking of quick starts, in the Maple Leafs division, everyone looking up at Boston, 9-1-2.
Yeah, that is
the machine right now.
They are a machine. I said, what you may remember in the preview, I said, well, what's the hangover like, you know, for a team that loses the seventh game of the Stanley Cup playoffs? And apparently not really that much.
Angry.
They have come out with a purpose. This is a team that doesn't give up many goals. Both goaltenders are playing really well in Rask and Halak. That top line is beyond ridiculous, and then they get enough contributions everywhere else. I think their goal differential is, I believe it's like plus 16. I mean, they're 9-1-2, so they definitely look like, you know, a team that – one of those elite teams, if you will, in terms of representing the East come Stanley Cup finals time. But, they have a nice, deep roster. This is going to be a tough team to beat, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, when the Big Three is going in there, generally referred to as the best first line in hockey, with apologies to Colorado, who's right there with them. When they're going and they're giving up, I mean, let's just call it 2 goals a game, and you've got Pasternak with 12, Marchand with 7, Bergeron with 5, and then Marchand with 14 assists, Pasternak with 12 assists already. Pasternak's got 24 points in, 12 games, right? 13
mm-hmm.
games, 24 points. I mean, you like to get a point a game out of guys, right? if that top line, and like you said, Tuukka Rask and Halak right now might be the best goaltender tandem in the game. Rask at a sick 1.42, and Halak not bad, 2.59 against. If you're getting 2 points a game out of Pasternak and you're giving up less than 1.5 with your number one in the net, that's a problem for the rest of the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I guess if there is something just to be not worrisome, but is their scoring probably after their big three? But you know, they got some guys in there, like Coyle and they have people who can score. So I mean, you know, DeBrusque, and you mentioned Krejci, and you know, so but if there is an area of, you know, I don't know if I want to say concern, but you know, that's not a strength.
Depth of scoring
for sure. Another interesting team who's gotten off to a record-wise a good start, and that's Florida, 6-3-4, though 4 overtime losses. But I guess at the end of the day, it counts as a point. So
points,
right? But and they have plenty of scoring. There's no doubt about that. But you know, -4 goal differential despite the 6-3-4 record. But they've given up 51 goals already. So think about that. You just mentioned before about the Bruins. They've given up 25 goals in 12 games. Now, granted, Florida's played one more game, but 51 goals and having a top netminder like Bobrovsky in net, that makes me think that you're not going to have a staying power with those kind of statistics.
Well, they might be subscribing to our old friend Matt Pryor's theory that if you're going to lose,
right,
and they're not losing right now, you remember, if you're going to lose exciting. So,
right.
I mean, to get the fans in the seats out in Sunrise, Florida, You might have to play some 6-5, 5-4, 3, you know, 7-4, 6-5 games, and you know, get 6-0. I see it back in there too. You might need to play that style of hockey in the regular season to get fans in the seats in Florida. And you know, right now, Coach Quenneville is getting him on the winning side of the score sheet more often than not. We were doing our preview show, and he posed the question to us, if there's a bubble team in the playoffs, who's more likely to get in, Philly or Florida?
Right.
I think that's still a good question today.
I think it is. They need to get better on their blue line. Interesting to note, we talked about on our Wednesday show about free agency, both Dan Deneau, I don't think we mentioned this, both Dan Deneau and Mike Hoffman are pending UFAs after this year, given their salary cap. I don't know if they're going to be, and given the ages of both players, I don't know if they're going to be signing both. So is it possible, especially with some of their other young forwards coming along, that they would trade one of those guys in season to help out their blue line? It's something to think about and something to watch out for. Montreal, to me, as we saw the other night, they're kind of a balanced team. That's a hardworking team, balanced scoring team, hardworking team. Got a nice mixture of players in their prime and some young players. What a pickup, Max Domi coming to Montreal from. You know, he had some good. Yeah, he started out great in Arizona, and then he kind of stagnated a bit, and he's been terrific. Since becoming coming to Montreal, you have Gallagher, you have Drouin. We mentioned the ex-Vegas Golden Knight, Nick Suzuki. He's got 3 goals, 5 points, 13 games. And, you know, Carey Price has been – he's been good. He hasn't been great yet, so that's always a good sign, you know, in terms of their record. It's good, and if he's yet to take flight, you know, maybe it can be better.
Yeah, Tatar, another Golden Knight on the roster, having a nice start to the season, 7 assists, 4 goals. So it's been years we've been saying, where's the scoring going to come from the Montreal Canadiens? And it seems like they've got enough, you know, scoring up and down the lineup. But now it's odd, Carey Price being probably the best goaltender in the world. The last 3 or 4 years, he's rocking a 2.59 goals against, and the backup Kincaid, his first win was against the Golden Knights. He played good, but he comes in with a 4.36 goals against. So now is the question mark in Montreal going to be, and with Price, you know what you're going to get, but are they going to be in the kind of the situation we harp on about the Golden Knights where, how much work do you have to give Carey Price in order to, you know, tread water with that club?
Yeah, no, that's and Keith Kincaid's a good goalie. I mean, I know, and he's
more great against the Knights.
Yeah, he's like a 1A guy to me, and they should. I saw him last few years, and he's got Long Island roots, by the way. Last few years with the Devils. He's been a good goalie for them. So he's a guy they should not be afraid of using. And clearly, putting him in net against Vegas on the road against, you know, a team that's very tough at home, that shows that they have confidence in him. Then we get to the Tampa Bay Lightning, who –
Well, they were on a back-to-back.
Oh, that's right.
They were on a back-to-back. So, I mean, yeah, it does show confidence, but they were coming off a nice win in Arizona the night before.
Right, but also, like you said, the way he played, they should not be reluctant whatsoever. I mean, Price is the man, and he's going to carry the majority of the mail, but they should not be afraid to give Price the proper rest along the way to keep him sharp and rested, because Kincaid can give him big efforts. So the Lightning – this year have, you know, it hasn't been great. When you look at that roster, I guess you spoke to Dan Harrington last night at the end of the Islander game.
Wasn't great then.
Yeah, and he, you know, again, they've been, No, they gave up. Let's see. This is going. Oh, this doesn't count. Last night, they've given up 47 goals in 13 games. Granted, they didn't have Hedman last night. And granted, they've played a lot of road games. But the bottom line is they're not where they should be. Now they're heading off to Sweden, I believe, to play the Sabres, who after tonight will head that way as well to play a 2-game set.
Which is a joke.
Sweden. Yeah, I know. I know how you feel about that. So, you know, super talented roster, and they're going to be there. And, you know, they may not wind up winning the division, although last year it really didn't matter. But, again, getting this team, you know, last year they were just so darn good in the regular season, and everyone just thought, like, who's going to beat them? Not just in the, you know, first round of the playoffs, who they were potentially going to match up with, but just in general, who's the short list? Be it in the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup final situation, or an Eastern Conference final, that could beat them. And you know, they're trying to. Like I said, best I can put it is find their way. And there's just too much talent on this roster. I just wonder, and this is just me. It's not based on anything. Obviously, they did sign John Cooper last spring to an extension.
Don't do it.
But you have to wonder if things don't get, you know, over the next between now and January 1st, if the ship doesn't get righted and they're playing to their potential. I mean, with that roster, there's no way Tampa should be 6-5-2.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I mean, coming off last season, I don't know if that's the hangover that you were looking for out of the Bruins. Is
right.
they came, you know, at, you know what I'm saying? You go off a
yeah,
season
no,
like that,
was.
and then you know, unceremoniously bounced from the Columbus Blue Jackets, had to scratch tooth and nail down the stretch to even get a playoff spot, and then you don't even get a sniff, you don't even get a game five. Is there still some sort of hangover from going through that, and then the extended summer that they were not looking for is, you know, starting to be a concern now with this club.
Yeah, no, like I said, there's just too much darn talent on this team. And like I said, they have played a lot of road games. That's why they can't win on the road. I'm just saying they have played a lot of road games. So they'll have some home cooking coming. But yeah, they need to get it going. You know, they'll have a few days off. I think the Sweden games aren't until the end of next week, so maybe that will help get some practice time in. And then bring up the rear in the division, and I say this
real,
with
real
love.
Real quick
yeah,
on Tampa.
Yeah.
You know, Vasilevskiy's coming off an all freaking world season. He's sitting at 3.12 goals against. The goaltending there, which, you know, you expect to be a strong point for that club, has been questionable to start the year.
Yeah, but I think a lot more. Now that I've seen all the Tampa games, so I've seen them a couple times this week as they were in the New York metropolitan area all week, like the Rangers, the Devils, and the Islanders last night. And I told a lot of Vasilevskiy played the Ranger game and last night against the Islanders. He had no chance of some of those. Like, he kept his team in the game at times with his play. So,
okay.
You know, the guys in front of him need to play a little bit better. I mean, look, just like anything else, everyone needs to play better. But I think those numbers don't do justice. You know, goaltending's is fine there. That's probably the one area I would say he would probably beg to differ. But in that Ranger game, it was 1-1 until I guess like 10 minutes to go in the third, and he robbed the Rangers so many times to keep it that way. And then bringing up the rear, we have Detroit and Ottawa. And like I said, I say this with love because I've been there not too long ago with my teams. But this season, yeah, as we all have. You are this year with the Kings, unfortunately.
Right there.
But this year is about, you know, playing young players and, you know, they're really contending for the April, getting experience, and this year's about contending for the April ping pong balls, April draft ping pong balls. So both teams have some good players. It's just a question of In Ottawa's case, they're playing a lot of young players. In Detroit's case, it's Stevie Y trying to assess what he has. Obviously, he knows what he has with guys like Larkin and Manthan and those new. But, you know, really, I keep saying it. I've said this last year or two, and I say, okay, it's great that they have all these talented forwards, but when you really don't have much on the blue line, you really don't have much in goal, you know, how do you expect to win? Like, so somebody that you don't want to move in this forward group is going to eventually have to get moved to help out the blue line or in net. I mean, and most of their top prospects are of the forward variety, so something's got to give over there. So it'll be interesting to see how Stevie Yzerman moves forward with that team between now and the
trade deadline. Detroit tied with the Kings for the worst goal differential in the National Hockey League, -20. And Ottawa, you know, they're not winning games, but their goal differential is only -8. They're very competitive when they play. Playing the Golden Knights, very tough in the time that the Golden Knights saw them.
They were in that eight game stretch, Islander 8-game winning streak, and same thing. Islanders won 4-2, but it wasn't an easy game. It was in Ottawa, but. So they play, you know, that wasn't one where they just kind of rolled out the puck. So not that that ever happens with the Islanders based on their DNA. But, so I hear what you're saying about that team. And they're playing literally a lot of youngsters. They have a number of, we mentioned on the Wednesday show, a number of veteran guys who are going to be UFAs from Boddicker to Nemstinov. I always butcher his name.
Nemstinov.
No, thank you, sir. And Peugeot, who I think a lot of people would want. So,
yeah.
I'm thinking for the Wednesday show that maybe we might break down a little bit of Ottawa Senators as our featured spot and why the future is, believe it or not, even though things seem, you know, you lost Stone, you lost Duchesne, this year is not going to be about the playoffs, but the future is brighter than you think, maybe.
Yeah, that's not bad. We could definitely get into that a little bit. They did pick up some nice pieces in going
and a lot
through,
of draft picks.
And a lot of draft picks going through their, front end of their rebuild. So, yeah, that's not a bad call.
I think I was reading I have to look at the stats where what rounds they're in, but they have 13 draft picks already heading into the 2020 draft as an example. So, and they also picked up extra picks in the 2021 draft already with some of their other deals, like the Carlson deal. So they got a lot of picks stockpiled, and obviously they're probably going to finish in the bottom 5 to 7. So, they're going to have their own picks. They're going to be very nice, in that upper echelon, if you will. So and they have a good pipeline from the deals they've made, too. So. On top of the young players they have on the roster. So, it's in terms of this season and competing for the division and those two teams, and Detroit, like you said, it's -20. That's very concerning.
Yeah. Well, it's excuse me. It's one thing to look at the Ottawa Senators and be able to see the path forward with all the pieces that they got. And, you know, they moved on from Duchesne and picked up a nice package and a nice player in Brännström from the Golden Knights for Stone. And it's another thing to look at Columbus. And you got to wonder what that path forward is going to be. They're okay right now, but the price they paid to get where they were, time will tell if that's too steep of a price. So we got 90 seconds left. Chris, you got anything else for us?
No, that's about it. Like I said, we're working. We got the Wednesday show now, and then we're back next Saturday. I'm working on finalizing that really good guest, former play-by-play NHL radio guy. I'll leave it at that for next Saturday. So hopefully you can get that over the finish line. Talk a little bit. He's over here in the New York area, so maybe get a little taste of the Islanders, the Devils, and the Rangers, and a little Metro action. Last week we did the Pacific. This week we did the Atlantic. And, again, big thanks to Mike Agello. Look forward to having him back on the show. He knows the Leafs and Sabres inside and out.
Yes, sir. Follow Mike on Twitter at Mike in Buffalo. And thanks to Hockey Buzz and Mike for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And
so,
we'll talk
real quick. What's the website? What's the drop and the new website where they can find our show? In addition to
why, it's the hockeypodcastnetwork.net, sir. Thank you for reminding me. And they have placed our show on Spotify. So if that's your podcast of choice, check us out there. For Chris, I'm Mark. We're gone. We'll be right back.